We've come to the end of our Deuteronomy series a few weeks ago, and I don't know about you, but I hate getting to the ends of series. If I'm watching a series on TV and it comes to an end and I've enjoyed it, I really don't want it to stop. And it's on a much deeper level here when we have a series, and we've had some wonderful series over the last couple of years, particularly the Coalface series. And now David Inglin, Deuteronomy. I just so enjoy the series. I'm really disappointed when they end. Now, does anyone else feel that way? Because there's so much, particularly in this Deuteronomy series, there's been so much meat in it that I didn't expect to find. So much in there that is relevant to today. And Deuteronomy is not a book that people generally spend much time in, and most Christians probably don't see much relevance in it. So I'm also sad about series that when you get to the end of a series, you feel you've closed the page on the book, you've closed the book and you put the book away, and then that's all over and it goes away. And there's so many things that we've learnt through this Deuteronomy series that I think we've got to cling on to and embed in our lives, in our daily lives, in our daily walk. We're told, or we are being transformed by the renewing of our minds. And that's very true. And it's not an instantaneous thing. It's something that happens day by day, week by week, all the time, while we're following the Lord. And hopefully we're always taking steps forward, not taking steps back. Now, I know in reality we take steps back. And this is particularly relevant for the book of Deuteronomy, because it's about what God is telling the children of Israel before they go into the promised land. And he says, if you do all these things, you will be blessed. But if you don't do all these things, you will be cursed. But you will not do these things. He tells them in advance, you're not going to do it. You're not going to follow me, so you will be cursed. Now, we don't want to be cursed, do we? Let's try and do the right thing and embed these things we've learned in our lives and in our daily walk. So I'm going to today just do a recap through what we've done in the series. A quick recap, and then a little bit about what does it mean, and then I'm going to pass it over to you. I'm going to divide you into three groups, and I'm going to give you each a question to ponder for 5 or 10 minutes, and then report on your response to the question. So something to look forward to when I finish. So firstly, quick recap through the book of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy, as we learned in the series, actually means second law. Now, it doesn't mean it's a new law. It's just a rehashing of the original law that was given to the children of Israel at Mount Sinai. That was 40 years ago. So Moses is just reminding them about the law, because now we've got a new generation. The old generation who experienced and witnessed the first law are no longer there. They've all died. So the new generation is there, and they're getting a revision, a bit like you're getting a revision there. Now, Deuteronomy is the fifth book of the Torah. What the Jews call the Torah is the name for the first five books in the Bible. And it marks a key turning point in biblical history, because here they are in the wilderness after 40 years of wandering and just about to step into the promised land. So a really key turning point. And the events described are happening on the plains of Moab. So they're across the Jordan River from the promised land, about to go in. It's a fresh start, a new chapter for a new generation. The previous generation that got freed from slavery, saw all the miracles, witnessed the giving of the law, they've gone. They've all died. Well, virtually all have died except Moses, a couple of others, Joshua, but all the others have died. They weren't allowed to enter the promised land, that generation, because they disobeyed God. A couple of weeks after being freed from Egypt, they reached the promised land. But they didn't believe God. They didn't trust God. God told them to go in. They sent out their spies, and the spies came back with reports, oh, they're too big, they're too strong, they've got big walls around them, oh, scared, we can't do it. So God sentenced them to the 40 years in the desert for their lack of trust. Now the new generation is about to take up the challenge and follow God into the new season. But Moses knows he won't be going with them. So he gathers them all together just before he died, and Deuteronomy is his series of sermons to them before his death and before they went into the promised land. So he's reflecting on past mistakes and reminds them of what all the things that God's done for them and urges them to stay faithful. So the first part of the book, chapters 1 to 11, is all about setting the scene. So it's Moses' first big sermon, and he starts by retelling the story so far. For those who maybe missed some points or weren't around at the time, he goes right back to the start, tells the whole story. He walks them through the journey they've taken from Mount Sinai through the wilderness and up to where they are now. He reminds them of their mistakes, or the mistakes their parents made, especially how they refused to trust God when they came to the edge of the promised land. And it talks about some more recent victories and how God's been faithful. Chapters 4 to 11, he gets more personal and he gets more passionate. And he challenges the people to trust, obey and love God with all their heart. This is where we find one of the most important verses in the entire Bible. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul and strength. Deuteronomy 6, verses 4 and 5. Moses warns them not to forget God once life gets easier in the promised land. And he calls them to remember everything that God's done for them. He reminds the people that this isn't just about rules. It's about relationship with God. God rescued them. God chose them. God wants them to live in a way that reflects his goodness. So then we move to the next section of Deuteronomy, chapters 12 to 26, where Moses outlines a long list of laws and instructions. And superficially, this is the boring bit. But as we found through David's presentations, it's not boring at all. And it's very relevant. And these laws are instructions that help the people live well in the promised land. And some of the laws are familiar from earlier, and some of the laws are new or modified to adapt to their new situation in the promised land rather than life in the wilderness. And it's not just about legal rules. It's guidance on how to build a just, a generous, and a God-honoring society. So it's very relevant to today. Do we live in a just, God-honoring society? I think you could argue we don't. Moses wants them to be a people whose daily lives reflect the covenant that they have with God. A key theme is how God wanted his people to live differently from their neighbours. The laws and instructions he provides aren't just a checklist, but a way to set Israel apart, shaping a community that reflected God's justice, God's mercy, and God's holiness. Now, the first part of this section focuses on worship. And Israel was called to worship God in one central place, the temple, and to keep their worship pure, avoiding the influence of the surrounding nations' practices. But worship wasn't only about ritual. It was deeply connected to justice, especially caring for the poor. For example, the people were instructed to set aside a tenth of their income to support the temple. and every few years another portion to help those in need. Now, compared to the nations around them at the time, this was quite radical. Imagine if today every community ensured a percentage of everybody's income was directed to their church, to local charities, and to supporting the homeless or refugees. That's the kind of justice that God was shaping. Then, following this focus on worship, he turns his focus to leadership. Israel's elders and priests and kings were all accountable to God's laws and to the prophets. Unlike many nations, surrounding nations, leaders acted as if they were above the law. In fact, the leaders were the law. Israel's leaders were subject to the same rules as everyone else and held accountable. Think about how refreshing it would be if today's politicians and CEOs and community leaders were all equally subject to laws and honest oversight. Be a bit of a different society, wouldn't it? That's the leadership God desired. The next section of Deuteronomy, chapters 19 to 26, covers everyday life, including family, business, courts, community justice, with a strong emphasis on caring for widows and orphans and immigrants. That is, groups that are often vulnerable or overlooked. They were then, and they are now. So the key question posed is, why are these laws here? And why do they matter today? Well, I think that's pretty obvious. While we don't follow these laws literally, the principles behind them are still important to us. God was calling Israel, and he still calls us, to live differently in the world, this world that's often marked by injustice and oppression. The call to worship God wholeheartedly, to care for the vulnerable, to demand integrity in leadership, and to pursue justice in daily life is just as relevant now as it was when Moses first spoke these words over 1,400 years ago. Over 3,400 years ago, 1,406 BC, this was supposed to be. This Deuteronomy, 1,406 BC, 3,406 years ago. Mind-blowing. God's call to be distinct is about reflecting his character so others can see him through our lives. We are to reflect the Lord. That might mean choosing honesty when it comes, when it's easier to take the choice of cutting corners, or standing up for what's right when that's an unpopular position to take. Now, in the final section, in chapters 27 to 34, Moses talks about blessings and curses. The blessings that will come if they follow God's way, and the curses that will result from not following God's way. And he tells them that they will soon fall away from God. All along, God knew what was going to happen. Now, it looks to us, when we look at the Bible and we look at the law, it looks like the law was plan A. And when they failed, when plan A failed, God had to fall back to plan B. Jesus was needed to redeem them. But plan A was never the law. Plan A was always Jesus. Israel will fail, but God's grace will not. So David, in his talk, asks, what was the point of the law? And he explained that the point of the law was to show us that we're not as good as we think we are. Through the law, we become conscious of our sin. The law is like a powerful light exposing a stain or a flaw. We think we can be good, except we can't. He describes the law as a perfect blueprint for life, a moral code that we could achieve by our own efforts, except they couldn't. and we can't either. God's plan was always bigger than the law, to turn us away from belief in ourselves and to point us to Jesus. So the law was all about pointing us to Jesus. In fact, the Old Testament entirely is about pointing us to Jesus, the perfect way, God's way. What kind of community is God calling us to build today? How can we live with justice and compassion and godliness in our communities, in our workplaces and churches? How could we use the things that God has revealed to us in the series? A few questions there. So I've got three questions I want you to ponder, and I'll be handing them out. So how can we make three groups? So I've got questions here for you. And after you've had time to ponder the questions and discuss them, I would like a report back. What did you come up with? So the question, what would that actually look like in practice?
Making Christ at the centre, and we thought of, I kind of shared an illustration that a student shared with us a few weeks ago, that like if your life's a domino set and you put Jesus as the first domino, when you knock things down, everything flows from him, but if you just plonk him in the middle somewhere, you're still making those first pushes, so put him as number one. Practically in the church, honouring God, not ourselves or our needs, so when we gather as a fellowship, looking out for not only each other, but just relying on what God has in store for this place and for us and for the wider community, kind of as we already shared about. And ultimately, it's about love. So practically for us as individuals, to spend time in his word and in his presence, in prayer, in your own personal studies, in group studies like this. So just basically to summarize it all, making Christ number one in our lives and in our church fellowship as well.
Very well done. I'd just like to ask a question to add on to that. David talks about it in his series. He talked about not having time for anyone else. If you're putting God first and God's the primary focus in your life, there's no time for anyone else. Everyone else loses out. Well, my question that I'd like to add to that question is, who benefits when we put God first, as Deuteronomy 4:5 says? Love God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. Who benefits? Does God benefit? God doesn't benefit. He doesn't need us. Do we benefit? Absolutely. But that's not the whole story. Who else benefits? Everyone. Everyone. Many places in the Bible it talks about, and there's instructions to the people in exile in Babylon, to work to their utmost for the prosperity of the land they are in, that the land may prosper so that they may prosper. So that's the kind of attitude. Everybody benefits when we focus completely on God. Everybody benefits because, as David talked about in his talk, what about your family? Doesn't your family come first? Well, the family will benefit more if God's first. Now, I know it's a bit counterintuitive, it's a bit hard to do, but it's where we need to be heading. It's where our focus needs to be to get to be ultimate followers of the Lord. And we're not there yet. And we'll be there when we're in heaven. But we're not going to get there here on this earth. But it's about striving to get there, and everybody benefits. We benefit, all the people around us benefit. Okay, the next question, Deuteronomy 15, 1 to 11. That's a fairly long reading, but I'm going to read that. At the end of every 7 years, you must cancel debts. This is how it is to be done. Every creditor creditor shall cancel the loan he has made to his fellow Israelite. He shall not require payment from his fellow Israelite or brother, because the Lord's time for cancelling debts has been proclaimed. You may require payment from a foreigner, but you must cancel any debt your brother owes you. However, there should be no poor among you, for in the land the Lord your God is giving you to possess as your inheritance, he will richly bless you, if only you fully obey the Lord your God and are careful to follow all these commands I am giving you today. For the Lord your God will bless you as he has promised, and you will lend to many nations, but will borrow from none. You will rule over many nations, but none will rule over you. And it continues in the same vein. So the question was, what does this reading show us about God and what it means to be his people? And the second part of that was, how do these laws apply to us? Who's the spokesperson for
Group B? Shows us that God lavishes love and generosity to his people and cancels the debt. But our group talked quite a lot about, you know, who are God's people? Is it just the Israelites, or does it belong to people who have given their life to Christ, so it becomes part of God's much wider family, so it extends beyond the Israelites, but still is related to God's people. The reading shows us to look after others if they have less than us, and I guess that's part of the forgiving debts as well, so that they are not burdened so much and able to make a clean start with things. And it's also sharing the generosity that God is showing to us. Jesus came to fulfill laws, not to cancel laws in modern times. And we need to look after not just the Israelites, but our Christian brothers and sisters. We depend on God in faith that he will provide for us, and we look to God. We don't look to our brothers and sisters or the bank of mum and dad or whatever. We should be looking to God to provide for us and our brothers and sisters. Deuteronomy points to Jesus, and he was all encompassing. So I guess the main thing really is that it is expanded to God's people, not just simply to the Jewish people, and that we need to depend on God for his generosity and provision for us.
And that follows on from Group A, really, doesn't it? And if we put God first, things will go well.
That it can help us to remember what we need to remember. And a couple of excellent points were made, because I can't answer the question, what's the point, when I think there are many points that are being made by the passage that Keith read for us. And one of the things that we were talking about was how we are so easily distracted. You know, I can distract you in so many ways right now by reminding you of Domino's. Who's thinking of pizzas? See how I've just distracted you again? I'll keep distracting you, because if Stu was sitting there and I said donuts, that's what he'd think about, wouldn't it? If I now start talking about my fellow Sydney Swanites, are you distracted again? Or if I say Gaza, are you distracted again? So there's all these distractions. We're constantly hit by distractions, but you need leadership. And that's the song was given to Moses. And this reminding song, the importance of the leader stepping up to say, forget all that stuff. You know, pizzas and donuts and swans, while they're good, you know, there's so much more. And remember, God has taken you from a point of desolation into the lavish, to use your word, Elizabeth, and your group's word, to be lavished. You know, you're going to get fat in this new land, Jill. I love that line. You're going to get fat in the new land. But what are you going to do? You're just going to spoil yourself with all of that goodness that God has lavished upon you, including Domino's pizzas now. But at the same time, you need to remember that it's not about the things of this pleasure, the simple, quick pleasures of this world, but it's an eternal pleasure. And Steve made the great point of, that's why we are so blessed, Al, because we've got the Holy Spirit. And we've got the Holy Spirit, you know, the Spirit of Truth, to continue to remind us. So while music, Vicky, continues to be essential for us, we can use those things to help remember the blessing of what it is to live in this time. This time, because Jesus has died and rose again, and that symbol is so much more. You know, what a blessing to have communion weekly, to remind ourselves of what was done on that cross, and the blessing of the Holy Spirit to be able to continue to remind us daily of how we don't need to. What's it called? The Pilgrim's Progress that we were talking about. The slough of despond. We were challenged to, you know, potentially read Pilgrim's Progress. How long is the extended version on Spotify? 12 hours and something on Spotify, whereas you can get listen to the kiddies version for 6 hours and 10 minutes. 6 hours, 10 minutes right here. Okay, so that idea of, you know, we can continue on to be reminded through story, but song is vitally important to remind ourselves. And, you know, I love my worship because it helps me to remember, and there's so many biblical truths that we can get in worship. As long as you're not worshipping worship, you're worshipping the Creator of who the worship is supposed to point towards.
Very good point about the power of music and song and the way it embeds in your mind. Certainly does. Certainly does. And God knew it way back then. I think our modern society only realised that fairly recently. But I think there's another little message in that little quote. It's not a very long quote, but the message is things are going to get easy for you in the land flowing with milk and honey, and everything's going so good you think, well, why do I need God? Now, that's reality, isn't it? When things are going really easy for us, why do I need God? Put him on the back burner. I'll come back to him when things get tough. So when they're in the wilderness, who did they have to turn to? They could winch to Moses, but what could he do? They could only turn to God. So their focus was, well, should have been, on God. Wasn't all the time, but pretty much they were forced to focus on God because he was the only one who could get them out of strife, like the quails and the snakes and goodness knows what else. So beware of being comfortable. So that's something else that I got out of that. And another warning about when God says in that quote that they will fall away is 1 Peter 5:8. Beware your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. That is a very great truth. So as soon as you get distracted and get too comfortable, that's when the lion strikes. So that's what I got out of it. Beware of being comfortable. It's nice being comfortable, but beware that God is still God. And your comfort was probably because of God.